Welcome back to RoomPak's Res Ed Chat podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Ramsdell, and this bi-weekly podcast series features a variety of topics of interest to residence life and education professionals who work in and with college and university housing. So I'm excited for our topic today because I do think this is one that's pretty generally applicable. I think just especially so to folks who are in residence life is the kind of blurry lines of boundary setting. And, you know, I think it's sort of kind of falls within the general broad umbrella of like work-life balance. But I think finding opportunities to set clear, healthy boundaries, whatever shape and form it takes, you know, I'm sure we'll explore a lot of that, is just important for any professional in higher education. So yeah, we'll get to a lot of good stuff for this conversation. Super excited for it. But we'll start out having our guests introduce themselves and give a brief overview of their professional background.
Awesome. Thanks, Dustin. I'm really excited to be here. So my name is Chris. I've been working in housing and residence life as a graduate assistant and as a professional for the past 8 or so years. I originally started my college career wanting to be a teacher. I think like a lot of folks who end up in student affairs did not know that you could work at a college before I went to college, and pretty much thought I had my whole life set for me. I thought I'd be a classroom teacher for 40 years, retire, and live a good life afterwards. Realized my senior year of college, which I think is probably the worst time to realize that you don't want to do what you thought you'd want to do, that I actually didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be in the classroom for my career. And so I kind of took stock of what I loved about college, and it was being an RA. It was being involved and really being around the incredible mentors that I had in and out of the classroom. So that's when I started my grad work at Montclair State University. I was a housing and residence life graduate assistant, and I've been working in a variety of roles in res ed and housing since then, and really thrilled to be here today.
Yeah, that's awesome. Kind of a similar origin story, one of like residence life as sort of that major part of your student experience. And then that sort of fork in the road of like, do I really want to work in the classroom? Because I think like, yeah, like there's a lot of people in my grad program that had that same thing of like, yeah, well, I was a history ed major, or math education, or whatever. So there's like that calling to education that I think is just a particular personality trait and those sort of things. And then yeah, that you just sort of like, you know, veer off, and there's some alternate universe where yeah, like you're in the classroom, those sort of things. So it's just that respect for education and obviously the very unique, complex dynamics that, you know, working on a campus brings, where, you know, you are supporting students, residents, and often also working with them as, you know, student staff members and wanting across the board to have kind of developmental conversations and interactions and create those structures and consequences, all these sort of things. So, you know, we'll start kind of with the 30,000 feet view here of, you know, through all of that, what does healthy boundary setting look like to you?
Yeah, so I love that question because I think it's really important for us to name that healthy boundaries look different for every single person and every single professional. So my definition is going to look radically different from everyone else's. Speaking personally, for me, it means having a life outside of work and working to live instead of living for my work. That's been really important to me. So I'm sure a lot of us have the story of, so the job I'm working at now is not the job I was working at the start and throughout most of the pandemic or the early pandemic. I was at a place where I just saw the college taking advantage of people. I'm going to just name that right out, and treating people really poorly through furloughs, through shame about taking vacation time or time off, through pressure to fill 10 different roles because we had furloughs or we weren't hiring because of the uncertainty that the pandemic caused. And that was a real wake-up call to me that just because I was doing work that was mission-driven didn't mean that I had to make it central to my identity. And so I wanted to find a role where I could be really passionate about what I did, where I could love the people, love the students, and give back, but I could also have a life. And so that's really been key to me. I think also what healthy boundary setting looks like, it also looks different if you're a supervisor. And I think in res ed and housing, a lot of us supervise people, whether it's our student staff, graduate assistants, or professionals. And so for me, healthy boundaries also look like modeling those boundaries for my team. I want to do my part to create a healthy work culture where even though we are doing stuff that's mission driven, we also know that we have to have lives and we cannot give 24/7 to a job. No job is that important where we have to give our full selves to it. And I think we're actually better at our jobs when we carve out time to seek out stuff outside of that.
Yeah, I think because that like initial sort of context can kind of create sort of the kind of basis for a lot more of that conversation. Because I think there's that part of it, the work-life balance and sort of, you know, the job, the culture, and the sort of organizational values. But then it's also like kind of an interpersonal thing too, of just sort of like, you know, how that manager, that supervisor sort of makes asks of their employees or, you know, colleague to colleague, and certainly in this context, like a staff member to a student, those sort of things. But yeah, like there's a intentionality there on kind of the individual basis of sort of just how you view the integration or sort of the separation of your work life and personal life. And, you know, it's everything from like, you know, do I keep Slack or Teams or whatever on my phone, you know, my personal phone that they're not paying for, you know, how do I sort of kind of clock in and clock out, you know, especially even for a job that's sort of just very blurry of living on campus and living in the residence halls and those sort of things. So I think that drive for people who do, you know, identify kind of as an educator, that just that calling that they have, I think that's like what makes this so much harder, I guess, from the outset, is that you feel like you do want to give so much of yourself. You want to help as much as you can. So I don't know if that's something that you've kind of grappled with, or you have some sort of like maybe anecdote or example where you were sort of confronted with that. And I think certainly like over the pandemic, it almost like forced people to kind of like pick a side or something. You know, you had the people who are sort of making very unhealthy boundaries for their teams by, you know, the dynamics that play, but it also forced people where, you know, it's like, oh, I have a child at home that I need to like take care of. Like, it is really forcing me to need to, you know, kind of draw a hard line here. So I don't know, just sort of in your life, sort of how this has sort of come up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad that you mentioned stuff like Slack and Teams. And I think that the, you know, I would imagine that 30, 40 years ago, the conversation around email or about computers was that it's going to make us so much more efficient, and we're going to have so much more time in our days, because look at how quickly we're going to be able to do work once these tools are fully integrated. And I think what we've seen is that the work is almost like a gas. It's just going to always fill up whatever container that you give it. And so email, Slack, this pressure of constant availability, I think is really insidious, not just in our profession, but every profession. So something that I'm really conscious of is that when one of the things I did that I think was really huge for my boundary setting was the, it's so simple, but the email icon on our phones, you know, how it's got like the badge or the, you know, it's got, you got 10 emails or whatever. I took that off because I just see that as a constantly like ticking counter that's telling me that I'm not good enough or that there's always something else to do. And so I tell all my team that I want them to know that they can do that. I don't force them to, because again, healthy boundaries look different for everyone. But I did that. And one of the first things I do when I'm onboarding someone is I tell them that you will constantly get communication, and almost none of it is urgent if it's email. You know, we've got campus police who work 24/7. We have an on-call system for a reason. And so if something is coming through via email, it's probably not that important or urgent that you need to get to it right away. So I really try to empower my teams with that. In my own experience, I've been lucky to overall have supervisors who respected boundaries, even if they didn't always model them themselves, because they at their level constantly felt that pressure to produce. But as I said, during the pandemic, I constantly got signals that you just have to keep working. To be honest, I didn't have great boundaries in the pandemic because I felt I was lucky to have my job. And I also felt afraid that I would lose my job because I saw colleagues all over losing their roles or getting furloughed. But in this, we're not post-pandemic, but in this new period, and for me, this new role that I'm in, I'm committed to having those boundaries in a better way, because I think it's better for me and it's also better for my team.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this moment is like, we have, you know, with the pandemic, it's a weird thing because I don't know if anybody knows sort of what to call it, but like, you know, we have like new tools to fight it, both like, you know, medical, you know, vaccines, but also just sort of like, you know, we've realized how much more is possible in the way that we work and work with each other and all those sort of things of like, you know, communication and stuff. But yeah, like you said, it all just sort of introduces new variables and elements that you have to kind of adapt to. And my thing that I did, which sort of is, it's like, I feel like you're almost like upping the ante, and I'm like tempted to do it because I do have a very big problem with, like, you know, I see that little ticker of my email and be like, oh, let me just go peek in really quick. And like, thankfully, like I have my work email separated out of it, but it just gets me like sucked in. And then it's like, well, let me, like, I could just, it's a flip of a switch to just like in my Gmail thing, like just be like, oh, let me go see what's going on in the old work email. But was like, not my thing was not getting notified, you know, so your phone isn't like constantly buzzing for every app that's on your phone. You could either like pick and choose. I pretty much do none. But it's also the idea of putting like do not disturb on your phone, you know, at least for me as like an Apple user. And it, like, when you do that, somebody, if they're really urgently trying to reach out to you, they just have to like try again. Like, you can even like set down that like kind of granular setting making to be like, hey, like, if you really need a hold of me, try again. Or you can, like, when you're texting, be like, notify anyway, you know, be like, hey, this is important. So like that intentionality too of like literally just this sort of kind of structures technically with these digital tools can make a huge difference, because it's like almost makes me, you know, the whole kind of like death by a thousand cuts or something. Like, yeah, if you're just seeing the emails rack up and the Slack thing, you know, and you're buzzing constantly and you just are like, you know, hunched over, just sort of like navel gazing on your phone constantly. And it's just like, I'm like physically uncomfortable. I'm just sort of like stressed out or whatever. So there, yeah, it's like small things with big implications, I think, can, you know, are really interesting to sort of explore in this space. Certainly, again, just with that, you know, the environment that you put yourself in that makes it kind of more or less conducive to having sort of healthy, boundary setting and everything. And it's not as if it's like, okay, you know, I do this, I'll never be stressed out again. It's just like, you know, you're sort of equipping yourself with tools that can sort of mitigate sort of, you know, overwhelming levels of sort of, you know, kind of inundation with, you know, notifications, whatever else. So, and just to kind of like bold, underline, circle, highlight this point, like with everything that we're talking about here that we have and will talk about, why do you think this topic is so important, especially for people in res life?
Yeah. So I think that you alluded to it earlier, but obviously for many res life professionals, and speaking especially to our entry level folks, you're living on. So I don't live on campus anymore. And that was one of the changes I made in my life that's really helped me separate work from life. But our live on folks, you don't have that boundary. Your job, your work, oftentimes where you're eating your meals, it's all wrapped up in the same place. And so you're sort of living in this fishbowl, right? I'm sure we've all talked to our RAs about those expectations, but for live on professionals, it is the same. Your work can become your life in these really big ways. So I think just psychologically and environmentally, that can have a huge impact on how you perceive work. But I also think it's important to name the systems that contribute to that. So a lot of this is individual employee behavior and changing your patterns, or as you said, kind of making those changes to your life and routine or your environment or the inputs that you're getting so that you don't have to think about it as much. So a lot of it is that. But I think a lot of it too is naming and calling out behavior from employers and colleges and universities that doesn't support work-life balance. Our live-on professionals receive a huge benefit in compensation, right? I lived on campus in one way, shape, or form as a grad and professional for 7 or 8 years. And that was huge. I didn't have to pay rent. I didn't have to pay utilities. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really understand what it meant to pay those until I actually got those bills every month. And it's not fun. So the benefits to living on campus are innumerable, and we can't discount that. But it also doesn't mean that our employers own all of our lives, right? We have on-call systems for a reason. And if a college or university is set up in a way where it's asking people to be available and engaged 24/7, even when they're not on call, I argue that's a really poorly run department that needs to rethink its practices to be an ethical employer. Because if our career services folks are telling a student, hey, when you're looking for your job fresh out of school, here's what to look for. Here are the red flags. Here are the green flags. And then another department on campus is basically living all the red flags for its employees, that's a problem. There's a mismatch in the culture there that we have to look at. I also think we have to name the fact that burnout for new professionals in student affairs, so not just in Res Life and Housing, but across all student affairs units, is incredibly high. When I looked a few years ago, I think it was higher or paced the rate of burnout for teachers leaving the field, for new teachers leaving the field within the first 5 years of entry. That's a problem. I understand why teachers leave at those high rates. And if our field is matching that, we need to do some real soul searching. So all of those are the reasons that I think for res life professionals, it's especially important that we talk about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think like it is leveraging things. Yeah. Like the on-call, you know, where like, that's such a like, pretty like clear switch, because it's the idea of like there's all these headwinds around, yeah, like expectations of leadership where it's like, hey, you owe us because you live on or this or that, or you're there, just help or something. Like they're kind of just like, you know, kind of pushing people towards that. But even the headwinds of like, you know, a student may not be cognizant of just sort of you know, different procedures or policies or something. So they're knocking on the apartment door at a certain time and you're just like, well, I'll just help you because you're here. But it's like, it starts to be that slippery slope where it's probably going to be harder or you'll kind of bear more resentment over time because it's like, oh, you know, I'm having to help out constantly. I keep getting interrupted or something, but trying to kind of, you know, send them to where they're going to get the best help, I think is always something like I've anchored around. It's like, hey, like I'm in the middle of doing something like, cause I'm not on call or whatever, or I'm not on campus and they tried to like call me or text me or whatever. It's like, hey, you're going to be far better served by this person who is like pretty much like sitting and waiting for something to happen. Like they're going to be there. They're going to be there quickly and be able to focus. So like, and that's something where it's like, okay, like maybe you do need to like put something on your like apartment door where it's like, if you need help, call this number. Like, don't even be like trying to like get in contact with me. It's like, you know, because I'm just going to redirect you there anyway. But all of that to say, like, there are just so many sort of headwinds and things that just make this sort of harder than maybe other, you know, campus-based roles to kind of forge that balance. And yeah, like you said, it's going to look different for everybody because it could be like, you know, if it's going to be 5 minutes or less for me to just like shoot you a quick message and reply so that you can go and handle it yourself versus like, you know, you waiting around or, you know, something not getting done. Sometimes in my mind, I'm like, yeah, like shoot me a message. I will point you in the right direction and good luck, you know, versus like, you know, you're doing it wrongly or feeling sort of out of pocket while you're trying to, you know, figure something out. It's like, all right, this is going to take me like 2 seconds to either just kind of give you a thumbs up or send you like something to look at to, you know, have you kind of build your own resources and sort of, you know, work through an issue on your own as like a student staff member. So, yeah, I mean, I think this plays out a lot differently between a staff member and their students, between colleagues and with the supervisor. And so I'm thinking a lot here of those sort of like interpersonal pieces, because it can be how we're using the variety of tools to, you know, kind of collaborate and cooperate and everything. So what are your thoughts around that of like, so the dynamics playing out differently between staff and students and colleagues and, you know, supervisors?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So I think with residents, one of the most powerful things someone can do if they're having that issue you alluded to where people are literally knocking on your apartment door, I think it's making sure that you have buy-in from your department and putting up some kind of signage, whether that's purchased and developed like through a process or that's a nice laminated paper with department letterhead that you are putting on your door. You know, and it shouldn't say, get out of here, leave me alone, right? It should be professional because you're still representing the college. It's in a residence hall. And so a lot of stakeholders can see that. But very simply, private residents, please do not knock. I think that every department should set the standard that their residence directors or their community directors, whatever you call them, are not expected to answer knocks on their door like that from residents. Yes, they live on, but they live on because they're on call. And if they're on call, there's a phone number that can be accessed. If they're not on call, that's their private home, plain and simple. I think that's a really powerful step that we should all try to normalize. Additionally, with residents, we know that our lovely students, when something is urgent and comes up to them, it is urgent and they want an answer immediately. But that's why cutting down the noise of email and things like that is so important. So if a resident has an emergency, they know. They have signs that point to campus police. They know who the CA or RA on duty is. They can communicate to those people. And if you are constantly refreshing your email, just waiting to jump into the next emergency, whether you're on call or not, one, you're constantly putting yourself in a state of stress, but two, you're conditioning people to know that you are available 24/7. And I think that's doing yourself a disservice and it's doing them a disservice. I think our entry-level live-on folks would probably struggle the most with student staff because that's where the boundaries can get fuzziest, right? We talk a lot in student affairs and in res life and housing about creating a family, quote unquote. I think we could probably, you're smiling. I think we could probably have our own separate podcast conversation about that. I'll lay my cards on the table. I really hate that phrasing. My work is not my family. I like my coworkers very much. I like our students very much. They're not my family and they're not my friends. When I have a residence director that I'm working with, if they use that language, I will support them in that, but I also want to unpack that with them and challenge them on that about what does it mean when you say that you're a family, because that can create some unhealthy expectations and codependency and response time and just ickiness, right? That I don't think that we should be in the business of getting into. So with student staff, I really think that not having boundaries is a disservice to them, because you're telling them that this is what appropriate work looks like. And for many of them, this is their first job. And I think that we're doing a disservice to them if we send them out into the world after college or out into their internships without having modeled what a good workplace looks like. I think that we're failing them if we don't do that. In terms of practical steps for student staff and kind of identifying those boundaries with them, I think the biggest thing that you can do is work with your supervisor or a mentor or someone to sketch out expectations at the beginning of the year. Are you going to give your student staff your cell phone number or not? I think either option is okay, but I think you're allowed to say no, especially if the college is not paying for your cell phone, right? So deciding, am I going to give my student staff my cell phone number? Are we going to have a GroupMe, which to me is one of the most hated platforms now. Sorry, GroupMe. Dustin, I hope they're not a sponsor of the podcast. Okay, good. I think that GroupMe, again, is one of those ways that allows for just like this 24/7 encroaching of our boundaries. But if you're going to have a GroupMe with your student staff, what are the rules? Are they allowed to post in it 24/7? Do you have times that you want to limit on it? Do you want it to be just for one-way communication? So for example, if you're posting important announcements about fire drills, closing, stuff like that, but then for them, GroupMe is not a, you know, two-way communication platform, I think you need to identify that. If you're not on call, do you want your staff to reach out to you? I would hope the answer is no, but again, boundaries look different for everyone. So I've got staff who say that, you know, by 6 p.m., leave me alone, even though our office hours end at 4:30. So they're okay with that communication in the interim period, but they're not okay with it afterwards. I've got some people who are more plugged in and have known people who are plugged in more 24/7. I don't agree with that approach, but if that's how they want to set their boundary, I'm going to coach and offer support, but I'm not going to push on that. To me, what a healthy boundary would look like with students is saying that I'm in the office 8:30 to 4:30, Monday through Friday. Here are all the ways you can get in touch with me. If you need something from me, I will be available. After 4:30 p.m., here's the on-call number, and here's a way to get in touch with someone if you need it. If you really, truly need me and you feel like it's urgent and you need support, you can call me, but I may not answer if I'm doing something else. I think that last piece is important because of the nature of our work. I think we can all agree that our work, it's not a normal workplace, right? We are running these 24/7 hotels, basically, but that also come with all of the increased burdens of the mental health needs of our students. Maybe I shouldn't say burdens, that might not be the right way, but I think that the literature shows us that our students are presenting with increasingly complex and just a more myriad mental health needs. And so there's just more to do and there's more crises. And our student staff are also young people. They are in general 18, 19, 20 year olds. And so maybe they do need something. Maybe you've developed a really good, strong bond with them. So maybe they need to talk to you. I think offering that as an avenue is important to do because of our work, but it's also okay to set those boundaries with them.
Yeah, I think like part of what's like kind of ringing out for me from all that is like, level setting expectations where it's like, I'll give my phone number to you, but like in case of emergencies only, and if I'm not on call, then like I might not answer or be able to like, you know, give you a substantial response. Like it might be like, hey, you know, I'll be back in a little while. If you still need help, I can check in, whatever. But even with like the, yeah, like a GroupMe thing, which yeah, like I'm sure many other people have sort of shudder at the mention of it. You know, because I think that was like definitely emblematic of a period of time. And like, there's certainly, I think, a use case for it. And I think if you, again, level set expectations around it, that's really helpful. But yeah, like, you know, I think the way to kind of thread the needle on that is we're going to use some sort of tool or platform to communicate where it's like, yeah, yeah, I don't have to give me my phone number. I can, you know, put like a do not disturb or something on Slack or whatever. So it's like, you know, if you have something like that, that can really be helpful to give that as like an outlet for people, but be able to really kind of manage it. And yeah, I think it's right on just like generally kind of across all the dynamics, the whole sort of like, oh, we're a family, dot, dot, dot. Like, you know, that sort of comes with a lot of like, you know, implications or obligations or whatever. And it's like, you see that like even off campus, you know, you see a lot of jobs try to kind of weaponize that. And I think that's like really the kind of nasty through line of all this is just like when you can kind of like you know, take advantage of people's empathy and sort of support and understanding and sort of availability and all those sort of things. It's like, that's where all this gets kind of tied up in a knot. And, you know, if we can all have that better balance and sort of relax and reset and all that, then, you know, we are that better place to support each other. Or just, you know, it doesn't even have to get into all that. If like you're saying, for, you know, all the kind of complex mental health issues, it's like, this is out of my scope. Like, I need to get you to somebody who can better support you. And we're going to, you know, certainly be supportive of that. Check in, like, were you able to get a hold of them? How did that go? Like, and I don't even know like what you need to talk about. I just need to know, like, did you get in contact? Did it go well? You know, anything else I can do for you? And it's just sort of like, okay, great. Like, you know, I'm glad that we could get you, you know, connected with that support resource versus, you know, that feeling of obligation, whether it's internal or external, of like, well, I need to be all things to all of my residents. I need to, you know, review their resume and be their counselor and do all these things. And it's just like, you were hired to like do a different thing. Like, you were hired to, like, you know, certainly anymore, I feel like it's as much of like the developmental kind of community building and everything, as much as it is just sort of like the operations of running that hotel. You know, like I need to kind of set boundaries here, because I need to just like administer and track and sort of, you know, be kind of keeping this whole cruise ship running. You know, like, that's kind of a lot of my job, is like, because I'm always just thinking more so, I think, of the context of like a professional is kind of where things are most salient. But yeah, and I think just respecting the difficulty of the dynamics of, you know, if you are a student staff member, maybe working with your peers or a grad student, and that's even sort of a whole blurry other area. And I think something else that's ringing out to me is like, we want to really model the way here as much as we can, so that, yeah, somebody before their first job feels like they've got a really good handle on communicating their boundaries, setting their own boundaries for themselves with just sort of their, you know, their various tools and platforms and things like that. So I think, yeah, as you sort of, you know, build off that, or anything else, just as we're kind of winding down, just, you know, resources, advice on this topic, other stuff, because I mean, you already had some great little pieces of advice, the small things that can have a big impact. Anything else that you want to make sure that you share out with folks on this topic?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the best resources that has helped me develop as a professional in all areas, but also with boundaries, is a blog, and it's free. Ask a Manager. I don't know if you're familiar with it at all. Okay, so it's an advice blog that's been running, I think, for 14 or 15 years at this point. And the woman who runs it, Allison, she posts multiple times a day during the work week. And it's just questions from employees, from supervisors, from all these people about work. And if you Google Ask a Manager boundaries, you'll probably find dozens, if not hundreds, of letters about boundaries in the workplace. So that's the resource that I always refer people to, because reading it has, I really think, made me a better employee and a better supervisor. And I'm going to say maybe slightly a better human. And I promise I'm not sponsored by Ask a Manager as I say that. I think the other resources, and this one's a little bit squishier, but asking a mentor, if you have someone that you trust, and say, that you can say, here's what I'm dealing with at work, here's what I'm struggling with, or here's what I want to do. Does this make sense? Or what thoughts do you have? Because especially if you're in a workplace that has wonky boundaries, and I'm going to use the buzzword, but feels a little toxic, right? And if that's what you've known, it can be really hard to understand what a healthy workplace looks like, because that stuff really destabilizes you, and it can make you totally unsure of what makes sense and what doesn't. So if you have someone on the outside that you can do a reality check with, I think that's really important. Of course, if you have a good relationship with your supervisor, loop them in too. But sometimes for that initial gut check, it's helpful to have someone on the outside. One of the places you can do that is the Residence Life Professionals Facebook group. So there are probably 5 or 6 anonymous posts a day in that group about, my workplace is treating us badly, what can we do? And that's in some ways disheartening to see that this issue is always popping up. But in some ways, it's really valuable to have that resource. So I think those are the places that I would refer folks to for help. And then general advice I have is to know that you can be proud of the work that you do, but being proud of the work that you do doesn't mean that it has to be your entire identity. And it doesn't mean that you have to give everything to your work. No is a complete sentence. No can be a complete sentence. And you're still a good professional, and you're still a good human if you draw boundaries for your students, for your staff, with your colleagues, and with your supervisor, and with campus partners. I think it's important to lump all those groups in there. But that's pretty much all I've got.
Yeah, that is good stuff. And I think Yeah, I mean, it's just good life skills, you know, like setting boundaries and all that, like, you know. So I think, yeah, like reading stuff like Ask a Manager, it's just like, yeah, because like life is communication, life is sort of interacting with people and all of that. So it can be sometimes with your actual family that like you could have some, like difficult things like this. But yeah, I mean, it's so important. And I think I know that it's something that I personally struggle with, like, and, you know, being assertive and doing that. So I think having these conversations, you know, obviously it's just reminding me why it's important, and even ways that you can like passively do it. Like, it doesn't need to be like a confrontation, but like, I think it is like those pivots that you can make for your own life where it's just like, yeah, like just sort of the constant fire hose of just, you know, emails and this and that. It's like, I can just manage that in a flow that works for me so that I minimize stress. But then I think, you know, I've thankfully had experiences that I've felt are really positive. So it's like, you know, I have like a reference point of like, things can be better. Like, this isn't just like, oh, you know, work sucks. Like, it's just how it is. It's like, no, like it can be really a lot better. And, you know, you don't have to feel like you're just like, you know, working for the weekend or, you know, like for your next like vacation or something. It's just like, no, it all kind of integrate. Like, I'm looking forward to having my own time, you know, for like a long weekend or whatever. But it all sort of like, you know, because I think it's also the, like, I'm glad that people are starting to kind of break apart that, like, you know, kind of student affairs and residence life and whatever else is like, just like who I am as like a whole identity, that like that's starting to get broken apart. But also that like I've seen people kind of with kind of hot takes on sort of like work-life balance or, you know, treating yourself or whatever. It's like treating yourself should be like, you know, keeping the spinning plates going, taking care of yourself, going to the doctor, whatever, versus like, oh, it's that sort of like, I just totally am tapped out and I'm like, you know, gonna have a spa day. It's like, do that. That is great. Everybody should have that every once in a while, but it shouldn't be where it's like you are just completely zeroed out, empty, just bone dry, and you need to sort of just like pamper yourself for a couple hours because you're like rewarding yourself. It's like self-help and sort of treating yourself and all that should be like taking care of yourself. Like, it should feel like, yes, I have the space in my life and sort of the room, and I'm not sort of like feeling like I'm constantly behind and those sort of things. Cause I think that's like, and it's much less sort of like sort of sparkly and whatever, that sort of like apex that I think folks should be reaching towards, where it's just like, yeah, like everything feels like more harmonious and I feel like I'm, you know, as caught up as any human could and should be, you know, just a sort of like your random to-do list and appointments and, you know, those sort of things. So yeah, I think this is really a helpful and fruitful conversation for folks to just kind of understand. I think just the ways big and small sort of culturally, you know, even like, you know, maybe a divisional leader, you know, you can really set a culture, set a tone, model the way for, you know, for your colleagues, for your employees and for your students and everything. Like, it's just an important topic for everybody. So I appreciate you jumping on, Chris, to chat all about this and ways to connect with you and the stuff you mentioned in the show notes as usual.
Awesome. That sounds good. Dustin, thank you so much for the conversation. I really enjoyed it.